Welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's Tuesday, April 22nd, 2014. I'm your Tuesday host, Scott Burton. Got a fun show lined up for you today. We'll be speaking with Bela Fleck about his concert on Monday night with Chick Corea over at the JDHS Auditorium on Monday night at 7:30. We'll be hearing about Bike to Work Month from John McConaughey and Sarah Bornstein. We'll be hearing about the Discovery Southeast Outdoor Explorers Summer Day Camp and their 25th annual celebration this Saturday night. And we'll also be hearing about Juno Special Education from Juno Special Education Support Teacher Stacy Doof about the Integrated Preschool Program. That, Writer's Almanac, Music, and more. Here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, residents of Kitimat and northern British Columbia have voted against a proposed pipeline project. The vote was a non-binding plebiscite aimed to gauge public sentiment for the project. But as Dan Karpinchuk reports, a local First Nation is questioning the point of the vote in the first place.
The $6.5 billion Northern Gateway project would include two pipelines. One would bring bitumen from Alberta's oil sands to Kitimat's port. The other would carry a form of natural gas used to dilute the bitumen from Kitimat back to Alberta. Until the plebiscite, the town was considered neutral on the controversial project. It did not take part in the joint review process, which heard submissions from hundreds of people before a federal panel approved the project with more than 200 conditions. Residents voted nearly 1,800 opposed to 1,300 who supported the project. But the Haisla First Nation says the plebiscite in neighboring Kitimat is a slap in the face. Chief Councillor Ellis Ross.
What this was causing the most discomfort for me was my members didn't understand what was going on with this vote. They didn't understand, first of all, why they're doing this now that the joint review panel's gone, and why don't we as Haisla get a vote? There's a lot of confusion about what the vote is all about and what it's meant to achieve.
Calgary-based Enbridge, the company behind the Northern Gateway proposal, says it's committed to safety and the environment, as well as permanent local jobs. Opponents, led by environmental groups, maintain the risk from either a tanker accident or a pipeline breach is too great for the small number of jobs the pipeline would bring to the community. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A bill to make 20 Alaska Native languages official state languages passed the Alaska legislature in the early morning hours Monday. Supporters organized a 15-hour sit-in at the Capitol on Easter Sunday to urge lawmakers to take up the bill. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Dozens of people of all ages and races gathered in a hallway near the offices of key Alaska senators. The bill had already passed the state house on a 38-0 vote, but supporters worried it would get caught in last-minute behind-the-scenes politics at the end of this year's legislative session. Lance Twitchell, a native languages professor and Tlingit speaker, said the bill simply puts Alaska's indigenous languages on equal footing with other languages.
We're really looking for language revitalization. And one step is that, is for the state to just simply say, this is an official language of our state.
The bill is still largely symbolic. It does not require the state to print anything or do business in any language other than English. But for many elders, like Selena Everson, it's an important step toward healing the wounds from being punished for speaking their language as children.
We're trying to teach our young children to speak our language because our language is who we are. It absolutely is essential to the survival of a people.
The Senate passed the bill on an 18-2 vote. It now heads to Governor Sean Parnell's desk. If he signs it, Alaska would join Hawaii as the only states to officially recognize indigenous languages. For National Native News, I'm Casey Kelly in Juneau.
The White House named a Native American man a champion of change. Henry Red Cloud is the founder of Lakota Solar Enterprises on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. The company employs tribal members to manufacture and install solar air heating systems for families on reservations across the Great Plains. Red Cloud also manages an educational facility for tribes to receive hands-on green job training. Last week, the White House honored 10 champions of change for their work in the solar industry. In April, the Navajo Nation recognizes its sovereignty with a holiday. The tribe remembers a decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. In the 1980s, the court recognized the tribe's ability to tax without the approval of the Secretary of the Interior. Navajo Nation Sovereignty Day was created in 1985. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation in Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome back to a Juneau Afternoon on Tuesday, April 22nd, 2014. I'm your Tuesday host, Scott Burton. With me now by phone is Bela Fleck. Welcome, Bela.
How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for being on the show today. For our listeners, Bela will be playing here next Monday, the 28th, at 7:30 at the JDHS Auditorium with Chick Corea. And Bela, Chick has had a big influence on you, right?
He's a big hero of mine, and I feel very, very fortunate that life has conspired to make us friends, and that I get to learn from him every day that we play together.
That's great. How did you come to know his music?
I started listening to Chick when I was in high school. And it was, in fact, in jazz appreciation class, they played, some more traditional jazz, and then by the end of the class, they played some Chick Corea stuff, and it blew my socks off, honestly. And I had just started playing the banjo at that point. Maybe I was a year and a half into it, and the way he played really made sense to me. I could imagine banjo playing the way he played, so I started going to see him play. I guess in maybe around 1975, I went to see Return to Forever, to a seminal band of his, astonishing band. And again, watching them play, it just really affected how I thought about music from then on.
When was the first time you got to actually play with him?
Well, I started getting to know him a little bit. I met him at the Grammys a couple of times, and some jazz festivals. I'd go hear him play, and I'd always go see him and try to say, "Hey, I'm your biggest fan." And then one day he'd been friendly for a couple of years when I'd run into him. So I asked him if he considered playing on a track or two of an album, and it was my first solo album after being the Flecktones for 4 or 5 years. An album called Tales from the Acoustic Planet, Volume 1, and we did about 3 tracks. One was a duet, one was a trio with Edgar Meyer, and there was a band piece with the Flecktones and Branford Marsalis. So it's kind of a magical afternoon. It all happened in just a couple of hours, and I was happy with that. You know, I said, "Wow, I got to play with Chick Corea, and it's really good." And then a few years later, I got contacted by him saying, "Hey, I'm thinking about doing some duet, finding some new duet partners for next year, and I was wondering if you'd want to do some shows." I was like, "Are you kidding?" Of course I would.
Dream come true, so, right?
It is, except it's a scary dream because all of a sudden you're expected to deliver on a level that you've never done, you know, before, because he's a very, very special talent. So so it's been great for me because, he obviously likes it enough to keep doing it. And we've been playing together on and off now for several years, maybe 5, 6 years. And I always look forward to playing with him and getting to spend time with him. He's a real mentor.
Well, that's great. Speaking of you, you've taken the banjo in so many different directions. How would you describe what you're doing with it these days?
Golly, I just like to play music that I like and that I think is challenging, and hopefully that has something new about it, something that hasn't been done before or hasn't been done much, or that there's room for growth for me as a musician from doing it. I try to keep that, so that music never becomes a job to me, and that I'm always sort of fighting the entropy of getting older. And, you know, lots of musicians, you know, go downhill as they get older. And I've always said I would fight that tooth and nail and try to become the best musician I could be for my whole life. And, you know, it's hard to hold to sometimes, but it does give you something to care about, and it stops music from ever feeling like something to take for granted.
Okay, that's good to hear. I was listening to some cuts off of some stuff that you and Chick have done together, and it seems like you are building upon what each other is doing. Can you tell us a little bit what that's like for you on stage as you guys build on each other's solos and build melodies? And what's that time like? It seems like it'd be amazing.
It is. It's amazing. I'm usually like on fire with energy while we're doing it, and as soon as we're done, I'm exhausted.
Right.
It's like a very tight beam of focus, because it's a lot of improvising and a lot of reacting going on. So it's very exciting to be in the middle of that, sort of our lightsabers banging against each other or whatever it is. But and he really focuses. I mean, he listens like crazy. And we're both very rhythmic players, so sometimes we get into some really intense rhythmic stuff. But mostly I feel very, for somebody as amazing as he is, he's not like judgmental or negative. He's not there thinking, oh, Bela, you suck. You know, I might be thinking, Bela, you suck, but he's not. And that's one of the things about improvising is you have to embrace the moment. You have to embrace everything that you do. And there's times to be self-critical, but they're not when you're on stage. And it's the worst time to try to be self-critical. You have to just go with it. Because what can make, you know, one of the things that can make something great is a mistake.
Yeah.
That could be what propels you both into the thing that sort of goes through the roof. And so we're always looking for ways to find, you know, the most natural, slope and energy flow as we play together. I think it's more about that almost than the notes. At this point.
Okay. Hey, Bela, what do you do on your free time? You live in Tennessee now, is that right?
I do. I've lived in Tennessee since 1981. I moved there to play with the Newgrass Revival back then, and I stayed in Nashville. And my wife is a banjo player, too. Her name is Abigail Washburn. She's a great singer, banjo player, and we have a baby together. So free time nowadays means being with our little Juno. His name is Juno, by the way.
Woo-hoo!
Crazy. But he was actually named after his grandmother, his great-grandmother, June Carvel, Abby's grandma, who everybody loves a lot.
Okay, so being a dad sounds like...
yeah, there's plenty to do, you know.
How bad?
Hanging out with him, and he's 11 months old, and he's real sweet. So it takes a lot of sleep and a lot of time, you know. A lot of energy to keep everything happening, all the music happening while doing that correctly. So
all that
challenge these days, yeah.
And you've been to Juno before, right?
I have. The Flecktones played the Juno Jazz Festival, oh God, at least 15 years ago. Maybe 10. I think more like 15.
Any impressions stick with you from the town?
I remember it being beautiful.
Mm. Yeah, it would have been just right around this time of year, I guess, if it was for Juno Jazz and Classics. Yeah, I hope today is absolutely gorgeous, probably in the low 60s. The sun is out. We couldn't ask for more. I hope it holds for you into Monday.
Yeah, me too. I imagine we're playing the same place, but I'm not positive. I imagine it's the same venue. But
yeah, it's a great venue. It's the high school auditorium. Which is it's a very professional grade high school auditorium. It seats a ton of people, great acoustics. It's a really fun place to play and watch a show.
Yeah, that's what I remember.
Great. So what can we expect on Monday from you two? What have you two been working on? What should we expect?
Well, let's see. We are playing a lot of music from the album that we made together, which is at least 6 years ago now, maybe seven. The duet album called The Enchantment. And we just take these tunes as, you know, starting points and just sort of let every day be different, you know, embrace whatever comes up. And then we've also got some new stuff to do. We've got a surprise cover tune that we've been doing and a new tune of mine called Juno, which I'm looking forward to playing in Juno.
Yeah.
That I wrote on the way home to meet Juno because when he was born, I was on stage. And I couldn't get home. There's no way for me to get home, so I went on with the show, and I had to take the red eye home from San Francisco back to Nashville and wrote this song in the airport waiting for my last flight home and brought it. So anyway, I showed it to Chick, and he really likes it, so we've been playing that. And some, you know, some of our, a couple of our older tunes we're going to do too, probably if encores, if people like us enough to ask for encores, and sort of ride the waves. Every day is different, and that's what's so nice about playing such improvised music is that every show is kind of tailor-made to that room, that moment.
That's outstanding. I happen to be an intermediate guitar player myself, playing a Stanley-style bluegrass band, and you know, I've had a few moments in the last couple of years where time seems to sort of stop. But I look at players like you, and you know your instrument so well that it seems like you can go anywhere and do anything with it. And I just sometimes I try and imagine what that would be like. Can you give me a hint?
Yeah, I'll tell you something, and you won't like it. But in a certain way, nothing ever changes because, you know, when you're playing really well, that's what it feels like, you know, for everybody at whatever level they're at. And when you don't think you're playing well, that feels crappy. You know, it's the same. It's like that doesn't really change. Even as you go up and up and become a better and better player, you're still a human being, and you perceive your feelings about the music and the way you're doing it, you know, the same way. Now, you may be dealing with different things. You know, it might be, boy, that would have been a great solo if I hadn't played that, you know, if I hadn't made that dumb mistake, or I lost the energy flow or something like that. You're just as tweaked as yourself as you are if you're a beginning guitar player and you can't get the G chord down. It's the
right.
Same feelings.
All right. Well, Bela Fleck, it's been an honor talking to you today, and we're all looking forward to the show. Tickets are going really fast from what I can see. It's going to be a full house for sure. So
well, great.
It should be a really fun show.
It is. It's very special. I can say that I'm looking forward to it. And this is our last trip that we have planned for this time, and I'm going to be sad to see it come to an end, but I can promise you it'll be special.
Do we get to see Abigail and Juno as well? Will they be joining you?
Not this time, but Abby has a relationship with Alaska and has been, you know, when she first started playing, one of her first trips playing music was to Alaska, and I know that one of these days we're going to have to come up there and do some gigs together.
Well, we'd love to have them as well sometime.
Yeah, we'll definitely be looking for a time to do that.
Well, Bela Fleck, thank you so much. You'll be playing on Monday night at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available online at thejack.org. Again, Bela, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Good talking to you, and see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Here's the CD title track, The Enchantment. can hear more of Bela Fleck and Chick Corea on Monday night at the Juno Douglas High School Museum at 7:30 p.m. Jeff Brown just ran in and let me know that there's only 43 tickets left at jack.org, so I would get on those really quick if you would like to go. With me now in the studio to speak about Bike to Work Month and Day is John McConaughey and Sarah Bornstein. Welcome, you two.
Good afternoon.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for coming in on such a beautiful day. It's nice to have you in the studio. John, could you start by telling us a little bit about how you're involved and what organizations are involved in Bike to Work Month?
Well, today we're here representing Juno Rides, which is the advocacy arm of the Juno Freewheelers, and it came about as a result of there were several initiatives that seemed to be working their way through the community and just pulling everybody's energy in it and trying to work on them. And one of them was Bike to Work Month, Bike to Work Day. We're also looking at a biking map for Juno, also a calendar with biking events all the way from either road races to charity rides to bike rodeos for kids, so that everybody knows there's just a place when it comes to biking they can go and just look at that calendar and figure out exactly what's going on.
Okay. And Sarah, how are you involved with these organizations?
I am an enthusiastic volunteer for the Juno Rides group, and it's been a real pleasure to get to meet a lot of the other volunteers who are interested in making this good work happen. And there's always room for more, too. If there's one thing that I've learned living in Juno, it's that, that if you're passionate about something, there is definitely room for you to make a difference.
Great. When did you get passionate about riding bikes?
I used to work for a bicycle advocacy organization in Seattle, and I would say that that actually pushed me into my current career as an urban planner, and so I've been an enthusiastic rider even before that. Actually, I would say that I initially discovered cycling when the gas prices started rising in 2005, and it's been an ongoing adventure since then.
How about you, John? When did you become passionate about cycling?
I think it was about 5 when I first got my bike.
Uh-huh.
Decided that the end of the street was not the end of the world. That you could, in fact, I remember vividly the first time I rode past that and was gone for 2 hours. My parents were not happy when I returned. However, they understood.
Right. Freedom.
Freedom, exactly. There's nothing like a bike to get out and just really enjoy things, seeing things at a different pace. And then on and off, you know, rode to school when I was in high school and then started picking the bike back up in the early 90s.
Okay. So this is Bike to Work Month, beginning May 1st, is that right?
That's correct.
And your organization, so Juno Rides, which is sort of an arm of the Freewheelers, is that right, has organized some events, some challenges. You want to tell us about some of that?
Sure. So we're thrilled to offer Juno's first annual citywide bicycle commute challenge, and it's been great putting this together with Juno Rides. We are basically encouraging everyone to ride to work as many days as possible in the month of May. So the point of the challenge is not to rack up miles. We're not trying to focus on the super commuters who can ride all the way from Ock Bay to downtown Douglas. Anyone can participate in this challenge, and we just want you to log your trips on our website and encourage your coworkers to join as well.
Okay, so what might one of these teams look like? So should it be in a workplace, you were saying, might be a good place to start finding your team, but it doesn't have to be a workplace. Can you sketch out what a team might look like for us?
Sure. So a typical bicycle commute challenge team would probably start with your coworkers, just because that's the easiest place to look. And if you want to build a team, you need to find at least 3 other interested coworkers who want to join you. The tracking tool that we're using is designed to work with teams of between 4 and 10 riders. So if you register at our website, you can go to junorides.org and look for more information. We are we're encouraging people to start by getting their coworkers on board, and then if you wanted to branch out and include family members or people from your church or people from your nonprofit where you volunteer, there's lots of different potential definitions for a team. We're not going to be very strict about it. We just want to see people riding. And I should also mention that this isn't just limited to people who work. If you're either unemployed or retired, you can still register. Be sure when you register to when you're asked to select your workplace, instead of entering your employer, just say bike for work, and you can still participate that way, whether you're biking to the grocery store or running errands.
Sounds like fun. Go down to the Rookery, have some coffee,
exactly.
Bike for coffee. And, John, I know you're part of Cycle Alaska, right?
Correct, yes.
Are you guys going to have a team over there?
We have, actually, that's a good point. You're putting me on the spot here.
Mm-hmm.
We should, because we have a number of active cyclists in our group that actually will be growing here as a season with the cruise ships coming into town and our tours. So, yes, we will put a group together. Because
that'd be tough to beat.
I can think of four people right away that would be delighted to be a part of that.
I'm already thinking about some KTOO Coast Alaska 360 North people that we can get a team going. It's going to be fun. Get
hoping to see a media off. We would love to see KTOO go up against KINY or the Empire.
Oh, bring it. Bring it. Challenge right now. I'll take that. That would be fun. And let's see, there are a couple days as well, right? Bike to work days to focus on?
There are through the month, there's several things. Bike to work day is the 16th. There's actually a bike to school day on the 7th. And I know Dirk Miller at Gastineau is going to, again, get his group together at the Breeze Inn and then ride down to the school. I think last year they had something like 50% of the kids had commuted to school by bike. It was a phenomenal number. I can't remember exactly. The Bike to Work Today day on the 16th. In the morning, as you bike to work, we're going to have a couple of bacon stations along the way. So if you need some protein or sustenance, you can grab that. We will have mechanics at Twin Lakes and at the shop. So if you've got a brake rubbing or tires getting a little low and you need some air or something like that, so some quick fixes, we can definitely help people with that. That evening, we're going to have an event at the depot, kind of an after-hours happy hour event there, and then we're going to have several different types of things we're going to be doing that night. And then on the 30th is going to be a culmination of everything, bringing everybody together to present the awards.
Okay.
The group that's actually has the most trips, Cycle Alaska is going to donate a free tune-up to each person in that group, and we're handing out water bottles based on the number of trips you do. It's going to have short films on biking and just enjoy the camaraderie of other cyclists.
It sounds like a lot of fun. And that one's on May 31st, is that right?
May 30th.
May 30th. It's a Friday evening.
At the Hangar Ballroom?
Yes.
Awards ceremony. Well, that sounds like fun. And then just backing up real quick, John, on Bike to Work Day, which happens to be May 16th, you said afterwards you'll be at the depot. Which depot is that?
I'm sorry. I should have explained that a little bit better. The Alaskan Brewery Depot downtown.
Perfect.
And if you go to our website, Juno Rides, it gives the timing and such for that.
Okay. And for more information on all of this, you go to junorides.org. We don't have a ton of time left, but you two also wanted to talk a little bit about a few things people should be doing safety-wise, getting their bikes ready for all of this stuff. What are a few ideas?
Sure, yeah. So for many of us, now that the sun is out, this is the first time that we're getting our bikes out after they've been languishing and gathering dust in the garage. And there's just a few things that you want to look over on your bike before you jump on and ride away. First of all, I should just mention that if you want to ride your bike, there are, of course, only a few simple things that you need to have. You need to have a bike.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have a helmet. And it helps to have a bike lock and a set of good working lights, and then you're well on your way. And then in terms of brushing your bike off after a long vacation, cyclists can use what is easy to remember as an ABC quick check.
Okay.
A stands for, can you guess?
Not airway. Air.
Air.
Air in your tires.
So check if you have air in your tires. B. Any guesses there?
Not breathing, but brakes.
Brakes, yes.
Nice.
Do you have brakes? Do your brakes work? How are the brake pads doing? Are they wearing down after a long winter? C stands for chain. So check your chain and make sure that it's not stretched or rusted and that it's well lubricated. Quick.
What? What?
Quick stands for quick releases.
Oh.
So make sure your quick releases are closed. Some modern bikes actually have what we call lawyer tabs on them now, so that the bike industry started putting those on bikes after a successful lawsuit where someone didn't close their quick releases and then they came off the bike during a ride.
Oh.
But the short of it is, close your quick releases if you took off your wheel recently when you threw your bike in a car or something like that. So ABC quick check: air, brakes, chain, quick releases, and then just do a quick little ride around your driveway or parking lot just to make sure that everything sounds good and there's nothing rubbing, and then you are ready to go.
And you have almost 8 more days to make a team for the Bike to Work Month Challenge.
Yes, and you can register all throughout the month of May. So when May gets here, if you're just finding out about it or you forgot to register until the last day, don't worry about it. We still want you, so come on over.
Well, thank you so much, John McConaughey and Sarah Bornstein, for coming in today. And again, go to junorides.org to get any of this information, to register, all of the above. Is there anything else either of you'd like to add?
No, just thank you for the opportunity.
Well, it's great to have you too.
Thank you.
All right, see you later.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 22nd of April, 2014. It's the birthday of the man who once wrote, "Love and Scandal are the best sweeteners of tea," the novelist Henry Fielding, born to the gentry in Somerset, England, 1707, started out writing for the stage, but his plays were political satires, which got him in trouble with the government, and Parliament, perhaps in response to Fielding's plays, passed a law, 1737, the Theatrical Licensing Act, which required plays to be approved by the Lord Chamberlain. And Fielding then retired from the stage and became a novelist and wrote The History of Tom Jones, a Foundling, the adventures of a lusty but good-hearted young man who falls in love with his neighbor's daughter. It's the birthday of Vladimir Nabokov, born in St. Petersburg, Russia, 1899. Family fled during the Bolshevik Revolution, settled in England, where Nabokov went to Cambridge, and then Berlin, where his father was shot and killed at a political rally in 1922. He fled the Nazis in Berlin, 1936, with his wife Vera, who was Jewish. They moved to Paris, and then settled in the United States, where he wrote and taught at a series of colleges. And in 1961, the success of his controversial novel Lolita and the film adaptation enabled Nabokov to retire and write full-time, and they moved the Nabokovs to a hotel in Switzerland, where they lived until his death in 1977. It's the anniversary of the first Oklahoma land rush in 1889, when the government opened up 2 million acres of land, which it had promised would always belong to the Cherokee, opened it up to white settlement. And on this day, at noon in 1889, a cannon was fired, and about 60,000 white settlers came streaming across the border to claim land. Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver, "I Happened to Be Standing." I don't know where prayers go or what they do. Do cats pray while they sleep, half asleep in the sun? Does the opossum pray as it crosses the street? The sunflowers, the old black oak growing older every year. I know I can walk through the world, along the shore or under the trees, with my mind filled with things of little importance, in full self-attendance, a condition I can't really call being alive. Is a prayer a gift or a petition, or does it matter? The sunflowers blaze, maybe that's their way. Maybe the cats are sound asleep, maybe not. While I was thinking this, I happened to be standing just outside my door with my notebook open, which is the way I begin every morning. Then a wren in the privet began to sing. He was positively drenched in enthusiasm. I don't know why. And yet, why not? I wouldn't persuade you from whatever you believe or whatever you don't. That's your business. But I thought of the wren singing. What could this be if it isn't a prayer? So I just listened, my pen in the air. I happen to be standing, a poem by Mary Oliver from her collection A Thousand Mornings, published by the Penguin Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Be inspired by John Deere, a well-known voice for peace and nonviolence, who will present Peacemaking, Civil Disobedience, and Truth-Telling in a World of Permanent War on Friday, April 25th, 7 p.m. in the K2 studio. An international speaker, author, and organizer of nonviolent campaigns, John Deere was recently nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize by Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Join us on April 25th. Be inspired by John Deere's vision and life work. Brought to you by Juno People for Peace and Justice.
Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 22nd, 2014. I'm your host, Scott Burton, and with me now from Discovery Southeast is Mr. Sean Isley. Welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And thank you for coming in on such a beautiful day. It would be a nice day for a hike, wouldn't it?
It would be a good day to get outdoors. We should definitely do that. That
sounds good. So you're part of Discovery Southeast. You're the executive director. For those people that don't know, why don't you give us a brief synopsis of what Discovery Southeast does?
Discovery Southeast provides hands-on nature education for Southeast Alaskans. So we make sure to work with children and families and get folks outside, make sure that everyone has a chance to feel comfortable and curious outdoors. Well, a lot of us are used to getting outside here because it's so integral to what it means to live in Juneau, but tons of kids actually don't get that experience. And so Discovery Southeast goes into all of the third through fifth grade classrooms and makes sure that that kids get that connection with nature so that they grow up with those interests and skills in their life.
Absolutely. I had the great honor of working for Discovery Southeast for some 10 years and wouldn't take back a minute of it. Running around in the woods and talking about science and the nature of Southeast Alaska. It's pretty cool.
What was your favorite part?
Nice interview question, Sean. My favorite part of being outside, there was this time when I took a class over the ridge out there at Mendenhall Lake, and we were doing our big fifth grade hike out to the glacier, and we came over the ridge, and when you get that close to the glacier, seems like a big deal right now because the lake's been frozen and everyone's been going out there, but maybe for a kid who'd never been out there and it's spring and the lake's thawed, that glacier is just something else. It's just massive, mountain-like rising above you, and this little fifth grader grabs me by the sleeve and he goes, "Thank you. I just want to thank you for bringing me here." So that's something I always remember.
That's awesome. You think about, a lot of times we think about the kids or the families that are impacted by the programs, and that's certainly powerful. But sometimes it's just as powerful to think about the naturalists and what it means for Juneau to have a group of skilled educators who are able to go out with the kids and give those experiences both to the kids and also what it means for those folks themselves.
And for 25 years this has been happening.
1989. It was the year that the World Wide Web was officially founded and the year that Discovery Southeast was founded. And if you think about that, it's pretty amazing how much back then they couldn't have had a clue how much kids' times right now are spent in front of a screen and how much scheduled time they have in their days. And all that is important, but it's just as important that we make sure that kids have the opportunity to be outside now, too.
Absolutely. And so as part of your 25-year anniversary celebration, you're having an event, a celebration this Saturday.
This Saturday, 25th anniversary celebration and banquet, 5:30 at Centennial Hall. Tickets and information is at discoverysoutheast.org. And we're doing it really special for our 25th. Often every year we have a a spring auction, and we're still going to have an auction, but we're also going a little bit auction-like this year and taking time to have a lot of fun, celebrate 25 years, and look forward to the next 25.
Absolutely, because you guys are a nonprofit, and you do. And tell us a little bit about where you get funding.
That's right. You know, our biggest source of funding is from members and community members and businesses. Something interesting about nature education is that it's not something that generally people come in from the outside to provide. It's something that our community has to make sure to do for the children and families in our community. And so our base of support is right here, and this banquet is really celebrating that community that makes nature education possible for Juneau.
All right, so there will be food, I imagine.
There will be food. There are actually going to be some great auction items. Gastineau Guiding donated a private whale watching tour, so get 20 of your friends together and go out for the whale watching trip of a lifetime. And Uncruise Adventures donated a seven-night luxury Hawaiian cruise, which sounds absolutely awesome. And there are tons of other great things to bid on. We're also making sure that we do a lot of fun activities. And so you probably remember from teaching in the classrooms having track mats where you can go and move your body and see how the animal makes its tracks. And you certainly learn the tracks better, but you also learn something about the animal's body and about your own body. And we're going to have some of those on a bigger scale for adult size. So
kind of like Twister, but with animal tracks.
Absolutely. So we're going to have a lot of fun stuff like that and focus on what Discovery Southeast does, why it's important, but also why it's a lot of fun.
Okay. And so that's this Saturday, starts at 5:30. Tickets are at discoverysoutheast.org. And skipping ahead a little bit, you want to talk about Outdoor Explorers?
Yeah, we've got two fantastic programs this summer. One is Outdoor Explorers, and that's our summer camp for grades for ages 7 through 12. Some of the weeks are for age 7 through 9, and some are for age 10 through 12. And those are outdoor summer camps that we run all summer long, and details for that are also on discoverysoutheast.org. Some of those are actually filled up, but there are still spots available in a few of the weeks. And the other thing that we have going on is teacher expeditions, and so that's one of the programs that we run for adults. And what we do is we work with the Forest Service and provide week-long expeditions for teachers to go out and experience some absolutely gorgeous places and learn with other teachers about those places and about how to bring that back into their classroom. We have one fantastic trip that still has space in it, I believe, up in Icy Straits, Icy Strait, and we'll be it's a whale-watching tour.
And you get continuing ed as a teacher, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Credit through UAS.
Awesome. Well, Outdoor Explorers this summer, teacher ed, and then in the classrooms year-round, taking third, fourth, and fifth graders out to learn about the nature of Southeast Alaska, to increase their science, to increase their exposure to things outside, decrease screen time a little bit, you know, sometimes. If you want to support all of this, you should go to the celebration this Saturday, right?
Yep. It's something that the nature education is something that happens because the community supports it, and so let's come on out and celebrate that.
All right. For more information, please go to discoverysoutheast.org. The event is this Saturday, 5:30 at Centennial Hall. Anything else you'd like to add, Sean?
At that banquet, people will be able to see a picture of Scott Burton leading a trip out on Mendenhall Lake looking over at the glacier. It's one of the pictures we were going through today, so it's amazing that you mentioned that. I can't wait to see it on the wall there.
All right. Sean, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Bill. When he ran, he couldn't stand still. He ran away one day, and also I ran with him. He ran so fast, he could not stop. He ran into a barber shop, fell exhausted with his eye teeth in the barber's left shoulder. I had a gal, and her name was Daisy. When she sang, the cat went crazy with deliriums, St. Vitus's, and all kinds of cataleptics. One day she sang a song about a man who turned himself inside out and jumped into the river. he was so very sleepy. I'm going out in the woods next year, shoot for beer and not for deer. Well, I am, well, I ain't, I'm a great sharpshooter's. At shooting birds, I am a beaut. There is no bird I cannot shoot. In the eye, in the ear, in the teeth, and in the fingers. I went up in a balloon so big, the people on earth looked like a pig. Like a mouse, like a katydid, like flies and like fleas. Balloon that turned up with its bottom side high fell on the wife of a country squire. She made a noise like a dog hound, like a steam whistle, and like dynamite. Oh, what could you do in a case like that? What could you do but stamp on your hat or on your mother, on your toothbrush, and everything that's helpless?
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
The Juneau Audubon Society will sponsor three cruises to Berners Bay this year. Saturday, April 26th at 8:30 and May 3rd at 8:30 and 1:30. The vessel departs from Stouter Harbor and Audubon members will be on board acting as naturalist guides. Stellar sea lions, bald eagles, humpback whale, and thousands of gulls are just some of the species observed this time each year. Cruises run 4 hours, and tickets are available at Hearthside Books. Student rates available. Don't miss the Juneau Audubon Berners Bay Cruises, April 26th and May 3rd.
Welcome back to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 22nd, 2014. And I am joined in the studio now by Stacy Joof. Welcome, Stacy.
Thank you so much, Scott.
And also Alex McGuan. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
So you two are with the Juneau School District. And Stacy, why don't we start with you? Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Sure. I work as a special education support teacher district-wide. So I work with, I support teachers in their day-to-day work. I work with families who have kids with special needs, and pretty much anywhere I need to go, I go.
Okay, so you see all the schools.
I see all the schools, and I only work part-time because I have two little kids, so I only work 2.5 days a week, so I squeeze a lot into a short bit of time.
Okay, and Alex, what do you do?
I'm one of the integrated preschool teachers for the district, and I'm based in Mendenhall River.
Okay, and integrated, that's what the integrated preschool program, and that's mostly what we're going to talk about today, is that right?
It sure is, yep.
And Alex, could you give us a little bit of an idea about what that is? What does your classroom look like?
Well, so we have actually two classes a day. So I teach a morning class and an afternoon class, and the program runs 4 days a week, and it's for students who have special needs, so it could be ranging from communication delays, working on social play skills with their friends, maybe need some help motorically. And then it's also for students who are just typically developing preschoolers, 3, 4, and 5, who just are practicing being in a school environment.
Okay.
So both groups of kiddos come to school each day, and they practice really what it means to be at school. So following those group directions, practicing, you know, walking in line to the gym. We do whole group meeting times where we're reading stories. Today, my students acted out The Hungry Caterpillar. So we practiced being the little egg and eating all the food and building our cocoons and turning into butterflies. So we kind of just practice what it means to be at school and how to relate to each other. So all those nice sharing words, you know, can I please have the blocks?
Right.
We do lots of singing and dancing, art projects. So it's a big learning environment for both students with special needs and typical peers.
Okay. And Stacy, how long has this been around, this model of integrated preschool?
Well, I think it's been around. I've been in this position for 7 years, but the integrated preschool goes back, I'd say, a good probably 15 or 20 years at least.
Almost close to 30 now.
Excellent.
Yeah, 'cause I know one of the preschool pairs who retired a few years ago put in 20 years. So.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's been around a long time. And my son, my 4-year-old's actually been in Alex's classroom this year, and he's just loved it. And it's a great way to learn the school routine and just learn that, you know, there's lots of different ways that people can look and act and talk and all those different things. So it's just a really wonderful preschool environment overall.
And, okay. Yeah, 30 years, it sounds like it's working.
Yes.
It's a successful model.
And every year we get more and more students. As a matter of fact, this year we had to add a whole another section of a whole new preschool, which is two more sections. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the idea, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like in education today we're trying to have all individuals together learning whenever possible. And so in this model in particular, do you find that certain students become mentors to other students, or is it just sort of a natural mix together? What do you see?
I would say both. Students build these really incredible friendships, and they really support each other. So we might be celebrating that one student learned to walk today, which is such a huge milestone. Especially at, you know, age 4 when you're finally walking independently. But then we're also celebrating that a kid learned to write their name. Mm-hmm. And that's an equal celebration. So the kids recognize what each other is working on, and they will talk about it. And they'll say, so-and-so's, you know, working on seeing better, and I'm working on tying my shoe. Or so-and-so's working on using their words to talk, and I'm working on whistling. So they really recognize that they're all working on different things, and they really, they cheerlead for each other all the time. It's so touching to see us sitting at circle, and one of my friends turned to another little guy and say, good job, you're sitting crisscross applesauce. And so the kids really do. They teach each other, and the kids really want to be with each other, so they really try their best to, you know, be kind to each other so that they can have friends, and we talk about that.
And peer support and such,
mm-hmm.
right?
Absolutely.
Wow, well, it sounds like a great program. And now is now the time that parents should be thinking about this for next year? Do you think getting their kids into integrated preschool programs?
Yeah, absolutely. You've got it. We currently have applications out there available on www.junoschools.org. And at all of the elementary schools, the applications are available, and they are due May 2nd. So by next Friday, we need it in our hot little hands. And the places, the schools that we have integrated preschool are Gastineau, Harborview, so those are both of our downtown schools, and then we have at Riverbend and also at Mendenhall River. So they're not all those schools, but and you don't have to be in that neighborhood school. You can sign your kid up for whatever preschool is closest to your work or their daycare or anything like that. And so.
Okay, so deadline is May 2nd for applications for these classes. You can get any information you need probably at junoschools.org.
You got it, yep.
Anything else parents should be thinking about right now as summer's coming on, getting ready for next year?
I would say just thinking about applying for preschool because it really is just so much fun and the kids learn so much in so many different areas. But also just that big plug, play with your kids creatively, you know, act out stories when you're reading books with them. Go to the library, do all sorts of fun things that involve play with your kids and exploring. Because it's really fun to pretend to be a kid, too, and be a caterpillar, all those other things.
Well, sounds like fun. I want to thank you, too, for coming in today. Stacy, were you going to add something?
Nope. Amen to what Alex said.
Be a caterpillar.
There you go.
Apply for preschool.
Excellent.
Well, thank you so much, Alex McGuan and Stacy Ju, for coming in today. And
yep.
I hope you go out and enjoy the weather.
Thank you. You, too, Scott. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon today here on 104.3 KTOO FM. Tomorrow on Juno Afternoon will be Ken Fix. You'll find out about the upcoming March for Babies. Chris Sell will be here to highlight next month's APOA Triathlon. Find out what a lip dub is. Get a preview of Ambassador Richard Boucher's presentation to the Juno World Affairs Council on staying ahead of emerging markets. And we'll talk to Jeff Kirsch from the Juno Douglas Little Theater about this week's celebration of Shakespeare's birthday. If you miss a Juno Afternoon or want to listen again, you can catch it and other local, statewide, national, and international news at ktoo.org.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
We've been listening to some Chick Corea and Bela Fleck, their cut called Brazil here. The weather, let's see, tomorrow, Wednesday, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers, highs around 51, light winds. Thursday, partly cloudy. Highs around 54, northeast winds to 10 miles per hour. Friday, partly cloudy. Saturday, mostly cloudy, a chance of rain. Sunday, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain. Looks pretty good. Highs around 54, lows around 38. Here's All Things Considered.